If Didier Deschamps were to leave and Zinedine Zidane were available and he was not picked by the French Federation, the headquarters of the French Federation would have to look at what happened at the Bastille.
OTB AM. Live. Weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
And you're very welcome along to this week's edition of Friday Night Racing, brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. We'd Frankie Dettori last week. We're topping it this week because I'm delighted to say Aidan O'Brien is our guest. Aidan, good afternoon to you. How are you?
Good afternoon. Good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, look, we're excited about the pre-lock trio this weekend. You must be particularly excited about it, given the quality of the field and the quality of your entries.
Yeah, no, looking forward to it. Obviously, we've three runners, so I'm hoping that they run well.
When you supplement the horse, what goes into the decision-making process around that?
I suppose you have to hope that the horse is working well and you're happy that conditions are going to suit. Obviously, it's a lot of money for us Sunday's race, but I suppose all the usual things, really.
In terms of your 1-2-3 in the race, Aidan, that time, where would that rank in terms of your proudest days as a trainer?
Sure. Listen, obviously, it was a massive day, Johnny. Yeah. For it to happen is something you couldn't believe. To win the race alone is incredibly tough, and you don't ever believe or think it could happen. But to have the 1-2-3 was unbelievable, really.
It was interesting reading Richie Forrestal in the Racing Post this week, just that even people, maybe the national hunt aficionados, I think the world just stops for this race. Whether you're even the hardcore jumps fan can't take his or her eyes off the arc, and it is kind of that type of race. We're just infatuated by it.
Yeah, no, I suppose it's kind of arc weekend, and everyone wants to be in Paris that weekend. It's a massive race. It's a beautiful facility, very competitive. And I suppose it's like what you said, it captures everybody's imagination in the autumn, really.
I remember when I was a few years ago, I was my flight was delayed for a day in Paris, and I texted you and explained it, and you said, well, you certainly could be stuck in worse places than Paris for 24 hours. So you obviously liked the place.
Oh, sure, listen, it's obviously La Mystique Paris has, and for everybody, listen, it's like I said, it's a great weekend, and to be able to spend a weekend there is always lovely, really.
You're from GAA country, and when we were kids growing up, this time of the year was when the All-Ireland finals would have been played. Obviously, a little bit later, if there was replays, it would kind of perhaps occasionally stretch into October. It strikes me that the ARC weekend and the ARC itself, it kind of, there's a bang of All-Ireland final off it, because it's essentially the end of the European flat season. The weather is a bit cooler. Everybody knows everything. Everybody is completely exposed. And on the day, we get to find out what we think is the best middle distance horse for that year. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, I think it is. Exactly. They're all there. 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, fillies, colts. Anybody that thinks that they can have a shot over a mile and a quarter plus and has the class to be in the race. I think it's very fair, really. It's horses are usually after having a long season up to then, and it's kind of whoever is left standing then. If anybody thinks they have a chance, that's exactly where they want to be. But it's very competitive. You need a lot of class. You need to stay. You need to have tactical speed. Everything has to go well for you in the race. You need a draw, and there's an awful lot of ducks have to come into row for you on the day for it to happen. But it's a very special race, really.
Do you know at the start of every year which horses you think are going to be our horses and try and work back what the schedule will be, or is it kind of they emerge over the course of the season?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe with the older horses you have an idea because you've seen them through their 3-year-old career. But like obviously with the 3-year-olds, you can get a lot of progression from the start of their 3-year-old career to the end of it. And horses can surprise you, and horses can come out of the blue, and it can happen. But usually kind of halfway through the season, you have a fair idea of the horses that you would like to have to take part in the race if they're in good shape come that time of the year.
Snowfall is a great example of that, Ger, because I don't know if I've ever seen a horse progress from 2 to 3 as she has, Aidan. I mean, when she won her, when she won at the Curra, I was kind of half following her because I love Deep Impact. She finished 4th, 5th, 9th, and 8th, and she was 50-1 behind Pretty Gorgeous in the Middle Park, which would have been the end of her campaign. And I suppose a lot of people wouldn't have had her in the Filly's Mile, rather, at the end of her campaign. Look at her progression this year. I don't know. Have you ever seen Anton like it?
Yeah, no, she's from a great middle distance pedigree, and she's obviously by Deep Impact, and she always showed a lot of class last year, so you were always hoping that she would come back. I suppose lots of circumstances stopped her from being very good last year, or coming to show how good she was on the track, and she had a few hard luck stories in races, and she needed to be given a little bit of time for her mind to be let develop, and I suppose that's what we did, really. We took her gently, and we treated every race as a kind of a stepping stone rather than a win at all costs race, if you know what I mean. I suppose, really.
It was funny the day that she was to run in the Oaks. I got a call from RTE that there was a podcast the BBC were doing about Shergar, which was narrated by Vanilla Ice of all people. I had to talk about it, and I hadn't listened to it. So I look back on Shergar's Derby performance about half an hour before the Oaks. So I just had to stop my study or whatever to look at the Oaks, and her performance that day, she won by 16 lengths. Was almost Shergar-esque. Frankie Dettori rode her that day. I remember there was a bit of ease in the ground, but one of the most extraordinary visual performances, Aidan, you'll ever see.
Yeah, it probably was. Like, it was incredible, really. I remember Frankie was so taken by her after the race, and listen, she settled well. We were very worried about the ground. Obviously, she was a Deep Impact filly out of a Galileo mare, so would suggest that nice ground would be what she'd love, but she obviously handled the soft ground, and obviously she's a big engine. Usually in soft ground, it takes more than fitness. It's you have to have a big engine. Like, you can have them fit, but unless they have a big engine, they won't keep powering through soft ground, and that's what she did on the day, and she obviously, we learned that she gets a mile and a half very well.
In terms of Ger's analogy about football as well, it is kind of like a minor that was decent that just physically blossomed. Is it to become a really good senior sort of hurler, or is there one thing you can put your finger on to explain, like, how she's just become so, so good? It was just, I know she's bred to be a 3-year-old, but she's, maybe it's middle distances as well, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I suppose Gerard, it was a good analysis of it. Like, I suppose, like, players like Henry Shefflin and those special players and loads of other GA players, they weren't always special on the way up along their 18s and 21s or whatever, but then they just became special. And probably because they just kept developing, and maybe had they been pitched in at the deep end so that their heart would have been broken to stop their progression. I suppose it's a little bit like that. I suppose the same with humans. The ability could be there, but if you don't ever really bottom them in their runs on the way, they can keep progressing. If you throw them in too deep and at the cold face front of races or matches or whatever, you can break their heart, and then that stops it, breaks their spirit. But of course, she was a little bit like that last year. She kept running, she kept going everywhere for experience. She was travelling there, and she was amongst the bunch. She wasn't in the front line at any time, but she was gaining a lot of experience, and physically and mentally she was probably developing it as she was going along.
It sounds like it almost surprised you a little bit, the pace of the development, and even, not the potential. I don't want to say that you didn't think the potential was there, but when you were talking about the breeding, it was like, it's almost a little bit unexpected that she was as successful as she was given the breeding.
No, she was very well bred, Ger. So usually what happens, genes will come true if you allow it to develop. Usually if they have the physique and if they have the ability, and if you think that they have the mind to go along, usually if you don't bottom them, they will keep progressing. Like, usually those bred horses, they keep growing and developing when the pedigrees are good. And because that's what pedigrees say that's going to happen, it's a kind of a roadmap, really. So I suppose that's what happened. Like, we would start the year with a bunch of 3-year-olds, and like, most of them obviously would have the physiques and the pedigrees to be good, and like, we try not to bang their heads together for leaving them as long as we can before we throw them or put them on the cold face front of each battle. They can be coming along there. But she, like, we waited a long time with her to run her this year. She just got out just before the Oaks in the Musidor in a race in York. We waited as long as we could, and she made a run in that day, and she won very easily. And then she went on to Epsom, and then I suppose, listen, obviously the rest was history, really.
I know, Aidan, you're 25 years and a bit more at this now, at this point, and the game has changed remarkably. The information and data that you have access to now versus what you would have had all those years ago. In a situation like that with Snowfall, it seems like a lot of his instincts, this horse is ready or not ready. When you talked about going too early and them getting heartbroken, there's no data point to say that the horse has had its heart broken. That's something that you must know instinctively. How do you merge all the information that you have and learned and the feel that you have for over the last 25 years and even before that with the cold hard splits of times and heart rate and all that kind of stuff that you must have?
Yeah, no, I think it's very true, Jared. All we have a lot more information now than we used to have. Like, and information is always an advantage. But like, we always think, like, on a daily basis, you have to keep observing them and watching them. And we always say, kind of, you have to see it to feel it. So, like, it's sort of like a child or a teenager progressing. Like, you just keep watching them develop physically and mentally, and I keep helping them and doing things that you can to make them happy and keep them happy and keep them safe and keep them sound. So, and then the time comes really for a horse in their classic career. You wait as long as you can before you start them or produce them. But then the time comes when they have to run, because if they don't run, they're not going to be classic three-year-olds. So we give her all the time, like obviously through last year, and obviously as much time as we could give her this year before we said, kind of, listen, now you have to go. And obviously when it did go, like, she did go and she did take off, went the right way. But that doesn't always happen. But like every horse, you have to, like, well, we try and give them a chance. Like, they're bred well enough and they're physically strong enough and big enough looking that they have to get a chance. So that's really the way. So give them as much time as you can to keep changing and swapping things. And then it's like everything, that the time usually has to go then if they're going to be classic horses. Like, if you only want them, say, if they're going to be 4-year-old, then obviously you can wait longer. But like, they're bred, and everyone kind of bred, trains and rears horses to be classic horses of their 3-year-old generation.
And is there a tension between the time in which the races are coming towards you and also the performance level on the clock? I guess I'm trying to find out, is there a data point where you have a furlong at home or two furlong or a stretch at home where if a horse hits a certain time, you're like, right, ready to go, let's get them on the classic pathway?
Yeah, I suppose with horses, there's a sales called breeze up sales, and kind of they like to see horses be able to do a couple of furlongs in 10 or 20 or 20 second furlongs or around that to say that they have speed enough to be good horses. But really all horses are different. When you, like, at three, like, obviously the distance are further, that would be for kind of 2-year-olds, kind of 5, 6, 7 furlong races. But as 3-year-olds, it's different. Every horse is different. But at the same time, those good horses are usually able to hit fair fractions. Like, they're able to usually do 11-second furlongs for 4 furlongs in a row. And usually when they can do that kind of stuff, they have a very high cruising pace. And in those classic races, that's what you have to have. And you have to have that ability to be able to go through those kind of fractions over those type of furlongs to be good, really.
Where would St. Mark's Basilica have come in terms of that data, given, like, just that turn of foot he seems to have in these races?
Yeah, he was always very high, Johnny. We spoke before, we thought he was a Coventry horse, a Hines horse, a group one over 6 furlongs, and he was showing those type of fractions all the time. Like, so, like, I suppose for a horse like him to be kind of a Coventry Jew horse type of horse, to be able to, like, obviously you would imagine he'd be able to get a mile, but then he went on and he was very comfortable at a mile and a quarter as well. So that horse has to have real class to do that kind of stuff. And like, he physically looked like a real good, fast, early 2-year-old, but he had scope as well. But obviously then when we stretched him out to a mile and a quarter, he found that easy as well. So that usually means that there's an awful lot of class there.
We were just talking about this before the show, that Ireland isn't traditionally a hotbed for sprinters in general. And like, we've had the likes of Eddie Lynam and so on, would have had some very good sprinters in recent years, really top sprinters. You don't get that many top sprinters, like, and maybe things will change in the years to come with different stallions or whatever. But if you got a world class sprinter, how do you train him or her differently to Snowfall, for example, or is there much in it?
Yeah, there's not an awful lot. Obviously, their strong works would be shorter, like, because you wouldn't want to extend them too much, because usually those fast horses don't want to be extended. And if you did extend them, like, you would drag them and they'd probably have too tougher works, and they'd probably eat into their reserves too much. So you always try to keep them short, keep them fast and keep them strong. Like, I suppose, like, obviously it's the very same as human beings. The sprinters train different than the middle distance people, or the 1,000 meter, 2,000 or 4,000, whatever, you know. So it's all little tweaks. But like, really, they have to have the physique, and like, to go those distances, you have to have the capacity first. But it's unusual that you get one that can, like, kind of go short distances and go kind of middle distances, if you know what I mean.
Would you like the challenge of training like a seriously, seriously good sprinter who can kind of turn it on for a few years?
You know, absolutely. But I suppose our thing is a little bit different. Like, horses for us have to, like, we're always trying to find the stallions and they have to kind of do it at 2 and 3. That's what commercial breeders want. Like, everyone wants a horse that's going to mature early, have speed, and then be able to compete at the top in classic level. I suppose it's a little bit different when you go to a horse kind of being good at 4 or 5, they're kind of nearly heading on to kind of jumping stallions, if you know what I mean, unless something happened to them at 2 and 3. But like, I suppose it's just the way it is, and it's everybody wants the horse that's going to mature early, be fast and have class all at the one go, if you know what I mean.
I suppose that's the pressure, isn't it, to continue producing those at the level that you haven't producing them. We haven't spoken to you since Galileo in the summer, and now, having seen the way that it essentially become one of the most dominant stallions in history, and the quality is going to be there generation after generation after generation, it's almost an immortal story now at this point. What's your reflection on that career and the influence Galileo had in your career as well?
Like, obviously, he always came to us with a massive reputation. He had that as a foal, yearling, 2-year-old, 3-year-old, all the way along. And then when he went to stud, like, it developed as well. So, like, he's been unique horse, really. Like, he has a great pedigree. He's obviously by a Sadler's Wells. But I suppose what made him different than every other horse was the mental trait that he put into all his stock. He was unbelievably genuine, always wanted to please, never said no, no matter what. Like, you could be with Galileo and a lot of his stock, you can be hard on them every day, and they'll still come out the next morning and they'll say to you, what do you want me to do today? Where most horses, like, horses are very intelligent, turbos are very intelligent, and if you push them too hard someday, they might come out the next day and say, listen, I'm not going to try as hard today, or I'm sick of this or whatever. But what makes Galileo different is they turn out every morning and they'll die on the ground for you, no matter what, no questions asked, and they'll never look sideways at you to say, what did you do that to me, or why did you do this, or whatever. They're just incredibly genuine, and it's a trait that, like, we've never ever seen in any horse before, really.
Yeah, and this, I was only thinking of this recently, apart from Frankel, who's an obvious example, Aidan, they were very, very rarely keen in their races. Like, if you look at Galileo's, they nearly seem to run to a very similar A, B and C, as you mentioned, that toughness, very versatile regarding trips, it must be said, albeit, you know, you'd expect them to be 10 furlong horses, maybe that, but rarely like fighting with the rider. And I suppose it's one of the worst things as a trainer to try to deal with, and as a jockey, if you're still keen 2 or 3 runs in, where are you going?
Yeah, no, I suppose, like, obviously, when you're training a horse, or anybody training a person, you always want to, like, everything has to relax and breathe and do things properly. And if that all happens, then you have a better chance of finding more at the end of the race. I suppose that's the way, like, you bring them along, and, like, everything has to be relaxed. And it's like yourself, if you're going along and you're tense, you won't finish as well as if you were going along and you're relaxed, if you know what I mean.
How long will it take for you guys to realise one way or another whether or not St Mark's Basilica is a natural successor to Galileo? And maybe that's unfair because Galileo has been so spectacularly, like you've mentioned Galileo in the same breath as Sadler's Wells. They're, again, a legendary, iconic, and it's like no coincidence that it's from the same bloodline. So how soon will we know if the offspring of St Mark's Basilica are going to live up to the billing, essentially?
You know, I suppose what makes this horse very exciting for us is he always worked like a real good top horse, and he has all the pure traits that Galileo had. If you see him, he runs with his head out and down and stretches. And what makes him different is that he has this great turn of toe. He's an unbelievable acceleration. And that's why when we ran him, we never ran him with any other horses. So like we were always very confident that if they stood still, he'd go backwards in a race. If they walked, he'd stand. You know, so he was always happy, just a relaxed folly horses, and we were always very confident, no matter what horses did in front of him or how much they quickened, that he would pick them up. And because he has that very, very unusual turn of toe, and then that pure genuineness of Galileo to finish it off. So he's a perfect cross, really, of Galileo and Sayuni. So like we think that that's going to make him like extremely exciting. And Andy was very, very good 2-year-old. So, we're really excited about him, really.
Was the turn of toe evident the first time you saw him?
It was, yeah. From the time he worked, he always had a great turn of toe. He was a little bit green and babyish as a 2-year-old. And because it was the COVID year, the races all were packing up on top of each other, and we couldn't give him too much time to get over from race to race, because he had to meet the markers if he was going to be a good 2-year-old, and we thought that he was going to be a very good 2-year-old, and we didn't know what was going to happen at 3. But as it came out, we were kind of pushing him into slots through the whole 2-year-old year that he wasn't really ready for it. But at the end, he caught up himself, and even though we weren't giving him time to catch up, he caught up and won the Jew horse. And then obviously when we started him. The start of the year, then he just, like, we thought he was very good at 2, but then when he started at 3, it just became very apparent very quick that he was very special.
And when that happens, is that the type of stuff that gets you excited, and there's kind of a frisson of excitement that goes through the whole operation because everybody realizes, ooh, we've got something special here? Because you've seen all the great horses, and I often wonder, when you've no other worlds to conquer, what is it that keeps you going and keeps you excited?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly, Gerald. Like when he ran in the French Guineas and the English Guineas winner and all that was there, like that was his first run of the year. And like he dealt with them, like treated them all with total contempt. You know, he relaxed and in soft ground, and he quickened and just left them for dead and won very snug. But like then straight away we knew, listen, this horse is very special. And then obviously he went on, and the French Derby is a very difficult race to win, and he did the very same thing. And then he went from there on to the Eclipse, and he met probably two of the best older horses that were around, and very exposed horses. Like he was a baby 3-year-old going in against them. It was a slow run race. The two older horses were in pole position in front of him, and they quickened and got 3 or 4 lengths on him in the straight. So usually if that happens off a slow run race and horses at that caliber, you can't pick them up, but he picked them up and beat them very snug, like well before the furlong marker, the race was over. And listen, all those things, like only special horses do that kind of stuff, really.
Just from the outside looking in, I suppose it's the one thing that people will be disappointed with on the flat, that we've seen St Mark's Basilica, but we've only really seen him for 18 months or whatever. Now he's retired, and I guess disappointing that for fans you don't see him sort of go on as a 4 or 5 year old. Is there more of a pressure now that Galileo has passed to bring in a new stallion, or what was the thinking, I guess, behind his retirement?
You know, I suppose absolutely. But Johnny, I suppose for those horses, they have to do with that 2 and 3. And that's what the breeders want. And I suppose it was pressure in Coolmore from the breeders that he kind of had to retire. Mm. Like, obviously, like you could wait another year, but you weren't being fair to him. Like everything he was doing was expose him to go to stud. And obviously, the minute he became special, like then, listen, the clock was ticking, really. He was going to have to go to stud as a 3-year-old. And like, obviously, we were very lucky. Like what happened in going to York could have finished them all together. And like, obviously he went to Leopardstown probably with carrying that, you know. So like, we were very lucky to see him, like, and to come back and do it in Ireland for us, like, I suppose is really where we wanted it to happen, really, you know. I suppose it was just too important to keep going at Johnny, really.
And finally, anything for the weekend, including Paris, for the Friday night racing listeners? I know you'll have plenty of good runners and it's going to be a brilliant weekend.
Yeah, no, I suppose sure we have. I think we have a nice 2-year-old running tomorrow, and I suppose then after that we're on to France, and sure, hopefully the horses run well there, really. But Seamus rides a nice 2-year-old tomorrow.
Well, listen, we'll keep an eye out for that. The off season is almost upon us. What do you do for downtime? How do you enjoy yourself and relax and recharge the batteries for next season?
No, really, what we usually do is we go to the Breeders' Cup for the week, and we usually go to Barbados for 2 weeks after that, and then we come back, and then we're working then after that. Kind of next season starts then again after that.
Well, enjoy the break. It's brilliant having you on again, Aidan. Thanks a million for joining us. Cheers.
Pleasure, Ger.
Thanks a million.
Aidan O'Brien, one of the great minds in Irish sport, giving us some insight into what the operation is like.
Something he said there, like, that was a fairly lengthy interview, and I know a lot of people be looking for this 2-year-old that's running tomorrow, who's, I think he's called Sun King. I did the Racing Post, and it's funny because I actually put up a horse that Joseph trains against him, who's by Churchill, who ran a really nice race called Comfort Zone, first him out. But I mean, that'd be a bit of a negative when Aidan is kind of picking out his horse again. But just in terms of the depth of that interview, he said at the end, we nearly lost him there, like, so when he got injured in that race that he was talking about. And then he was off for, was he off for like 10 weeks or something like that? So, like, this St. Mark's Basilica is now retired, as he calls one of his, you know, the best horses, just to emphasise the fragility of it. Just could have died a few months ago, you know. And then he talks about the pressure that the stud is putting on the training regime to turn him into a stallion. And the reason he becomes a stallion is to breed other racehorses. But he himself, as a racehorse, is only racing until he's 3. And that's kind of the flat game in a nutshell, in some respects, even though it's kind of maddening, because, like, he may not be the best horse I've ever trained. He may be the best horse I've ever trained, but we won't really know per se, because he didn't dance as many dances as you'd like, as in he didn't go to war as a 4-year-old. But that's the nature of the flat game, and that's why a lot of, I think, jumps fans will never really warm to it like they would jumps.
I love the bit where it's Snowfall emerges over the course of the season, and while the breeding was always there, you don't know when it's going to emerge.
Mm.
It's kind of like the gold prospectors, and there's loads of the fool's gold in the middle of it, and then the one nugget comes, and you have to just keep going and find it there. And that's the bit where the art and the science mix. And it's just fascinating. Like, you know, you've got there literally the greatest trainer in the world doing what he's doing, explaining, yeah, I do use the science, absolutely. But then talking about a horse having its heart broken.
Yeah.
The horse isn't telling you it has its heart's broken. Obviously, it performs like that after a period of time. And you're like, okay, well, that was, like, in retrospectively, like Ralph Wiggum, precisely identify the moment his heart is breaking here.
Ripped in half, yeah. It's a great episode. But he's very reliant on his staff there. You know, I'm actually amazed that he can just name every horse one by one when he looks at them, particularly when they look so alike, a lot of them. They're by the same daddy. And he can just reel them off. But it's the work riders, like, are so important. It's an incredibly good team of work riders. He mentioned Seamus Heffernan there, who would be such an important part. But what was interesting in the year that Galileo passed away, because Galileo's influence on the stock is just is genuinely unbelievable, and
kind of eternal. That is
it's
the point.
Eternal. Yeah. It's because
the same way Sadler's Wells is,
and Northern Dancer, and so on and so forth. So, like, as you go back, and then maybe you go back to the three stallions who basically shaped the thoroughbred and the such, you know, the Arab breeding there, and so on and so forth. But in the modern age, you know, they've experimented with other stallions that haven't worked out. Like Galileo, he wasn't the best racehorse ever or whatever. Like, he was a really good racehorse, but it's just that toughness that you can rely on his stock.
Well, that's mad.
Yeah, and that'll bring you to the line.
Why does all the other Sadler's Wells horses not have that?
No, it's not that they don't. And in fairness to
Well, they don't have it to the same degree.
They don't have the... I don't really know, because Sadler's Wells had other horses, like, for example, Monju, who wasn't like that. He was quirky. It wasn't that he was genuine, but he had his king. links. A lot of these horses, like if you're breeding horses that are keen, that's a massive, massive negative, because it is a difference to the human at the end of the day. Like there is a kind of a hierarchy here where the horse wants to run for the human master. And I know that sounds a bit kind of harsh, but it's sort of true. Like, so if the horse defers to you, like the pet that you love, if you don't necessarily love your pet, if your pet is trying to, you know, get one over you, whereas if your pet kind of wants to serve you and be good, horses that do that are better than horses that start fighting. And that if you can't teach them to settle and you can't let them drop the bit, whether it's nervous anxiety or whether it's just the fact that they're headstrong, they're never going to reach their potential. And Galileo horses, apart from Frankel, really, it's very, very hard to think off the top of my head of very good horses. But the point I was meandering towards was that we spoke about four horses, really, of Aidan O'Brien's that are extremely topical at the moment. St. Mark's Basilica, who's retired. Snowfall, who's favourite or second favourite for the Arc. Luxembourg, who's now favourite for the Derby, who ran last weekend. And Tenebrism, who came back and won the fillies Group 1. None of them is by Galileo, and that's really, really weird. There are four different stallions: Sayuni, Caravaggio, Deep Impact, and Camelot in the shape of Luxembourg, who looks... And this is the beauty of racing, that St. Mark's Basilica is retired, and Luxembourg, who's by Camelot, he is absolutely stunning to look at. And the way he won the Beresford at the weekend was amazing. And then on the Tuesday, I think, his full brother was sold as a yearling for 1.1 million or whatever it was. But the clock keeps, the circle just keeps going.
I don't know if you remember the magic eye thing that was popular in the 90s. It was a picture, you had to stare at it for a while.
Yeah.
Sometimes it strikes me that flat racing is a bit like that. If you can tune in properly to the great tectonic plates of the old houses that are up against each other in these big races, then all of a sudden there's this incredibly rich tapestry to horses that we see shimmer across for an 18-month period. It's not actually 18 months. It's a generation, it's the previous generation and before that,
and it's the breeding of it. It goes on and on and on. And
if that comes into relief, if you can see that, if you just stare at it for long enough, you're like, ah, this is the great house of, you know.
But it'll still make a fool of you, because like Galileo was not doing well when Jim Bulger started investing in him. In his first year, Galileo wasn't doing well, and his stallion fee dropped, I think, to 37.5 grand. So there'll be massive.
We might be able to get collection going.
St. Mark's Basilica.
How much will that be?
Aidan said he was precocious. I mean, I'm guessing he'll be like 80, 100 grand or something like that, because he's not, doesn't matter how good he is, he's not proven as a stallion. And maybe he'll be more than that. Frankel was more than that, but like, you couldn't say he's Frankel. So it's not certain that his horses will make 2-year-olds. Like Galileo horses, he might say they're precocious, but generally they're 3-year-olds. Aidan trains these Galileos that to improve with time. They rarely win maidens earlier in the season, so they're not like, but that's not necessarily the horse you want. But the St. Mark's Basilica horses might want time. And then in his first season, if they're like, there's so much expectation about Churchill, for example, and if they're not an immediate success, doubts start to creep in. Oh, St. Mark's Basilica, this or that. And then the guy who goes to the sales and just says, listen, it's like the good guy on the stock market, he goes against the crowd and he says, listen, that's all waffle, to be honest. Like, give them time. Yeah. I'm willing to play the longer game. And like Jim Bulger, I'm now getting Galileo at a third off what he was. And now Galileo was... Galileo was ended up in essentially private or half a million. But at that time, he was 37 grand. So you have to say, well, I'm going to... And the guy who goes to the sales and he sees this horse and the stallion isn't popular, but he looks at that horse and he says, I just love the way that horse walks. I love his head. I love everything about him. And this is the best thing ever. I'm getting him for like 20% of his price, because his daddy's not that popular at the moment. I'm willing to forgive him. That's the beauty of the game, in that they're completely different opinions. And just like stocks and shares, if everyone says like buy Aircom shares, you probably shouldn't.
Yeah, or if the shoeshine boy is in that story. So if you want to get in touch, you can leave a comment in the YouTube stream. You can text the show this evening on 53106. This is Friday Night Racing, brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. As I said earlier on, we had Frankie Dettori on the show last week. He was in excellent form, and he seemed to be in excellent form from all the photographs and video that I saw from Bellewstown on Thursday. Johnny, we sat here last week, we interviewed him, and then we were like, he's definitely going to win that race, isn't he? I didn't back him. Did you back him?
No.
And he wasn't unbackable. It went to post a 4-1.
No, it went off 9-2. But it was truly remarkable. Like, and
he was always going to win. It was fated, written in the stars, if ever there was a sure thing. Here we are, after timing horribly. Like,
Yeah, but in fairness, without the after time, like, you could definitely have backed the horse. It had solid form in the book. But what struck me was the cult of personality around Frankie Dettori was staggering. There was a cult of personality around Barney Curley, in which, like, a lot of people genuinely wanted to get a photo in the phone box, in which the Yellow Sam story was so central in that phone box. Ended up meeting relatives of his, of Barney Curley's, relatives of the guy in the phone box. It was a great day out. But Frankie Dettori, and it made me think, because I don't know Frankie that well. I've sometimes gotten the impression that he's not the warmest personality. And I think he kind of puts on a bit of a show in front of the cameras. And I was looking at him yesterday and I was saying, I don't know how he does this. I honestly have no idea how he does it. You have Ryan Moore on one end, who basically says, bugger all, and is just like, oh, I just want to ride the horses, leave me alone. And then you have Frankie, who he must have posed for 2,000 selfies yesterday. He was in a small Irish racetrack to ride a horse in a run-of-the-mill race. He was there in a day trip, but it was incessant. It was absolutely incessant. And
they were there to see him.
They were there to see him, and to my mind, he basically stopped for every photograph.
So if there have been some occasions in the past where he was less than effusive in every single moment, I bet you that got reported.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How easy it is for that, like...
There's always sort of a story behind it, like, and he had the X appeal, and in fairness, him to win in the race, it was quite special. And I'm not a spiritual person, I don't believe in God, but you are thinking, well, Barney's kind of looking down this here, you know. It was cool, it was really cool, and he lit the place up.
The atmosphere good?
Yeah, it was, and I have to be honest, I haven't been racing in a year, since Listowel last year. I hadn't been racing, so it was over 12 months. And funnily enough, people said to me yesterday in the press room, he said, this was the first day since the start of COVID that it felt like we're kind of coming back. We just need Frankie Dettori to have a winner for Barney Curley every day of the week. Well,
do you know the whole thing about everybody's scared, people are getting out of the habit of doing the things that they used to do, and so you're going to have to relearn those things. I think we're going to slip back into doing the things that we wanted to do and did before, and we'll get back to match going, we'll get back to pints beforehand and arguments afterwards, because that's kind of the sports culture that we have.
Yeah, I agree, but I do think racing is a challenge because, you know, it's a world where people are coming out of COVID in some respects more addicted to their phones than ever, probably worse attention span than ever, and the key for racing is to sell it as a day-long entertainment when, you know, much of the time only 5-10% of the actual day is taken up by the sport. There's so much stuff in between that you have to sell that, and it's not necessarily that easy. That's why we have shows like this where we want to promote the sport. But a day at the races in 2021 is not a day at the races in 1981 or 1975 when Yellow Sam won. It's a different world now, and we have to sell that and make it easier to sell. And that's the challenge that racing will face going forward.
Search for a Song added 18 points for Johnny in the Tote 10 to follow last weekend, stretching his lead over me to 31 points. Will the big Pre-Lark favourite Tarnawa do the business for you? You've got Tarnawa, right? And extend your lead even further on Sunday, or will it be snowfall for both of us to maintain the status quo?
By chance of catching...
What's there's 3:38, 4:12? I don't think so.
Probably not. Tarnawa's a good chance, yeah. Dermot Well was talking up the Japanese horse whose name escapes me during the week. This is an interest point just in terms of the tote, because there'll be a lot of Far Eastern money put into the pool. So if you're having a bet with the tote, by all means do. And back an Irish or British horse, whatever your fancy is, because it'll probably be a skewed market. The Japanese bettors seem to be patriotic bettors, which is great as long as you're not backing what they are, and that'll make, I mean, it's conceivable something like, I think Snowfall has a great chance, she could go off 7-1 conceivably, like, do you know what I mean?
A reminder, the Tote Jackpot is available on all Irish race meetings. You can play the Tote Jackpot on all races and on tote.ie. Right, is there anything else that we need to talk about? You did find the name of that 2-year-old.
I think it's Sun King, who is a horse by Galileo, who he would have run first time out in Galway. Sun King, yeah. First time out in Galway, it was a good run. Now, Fiacc McHugh is in the race. That's ring a bell to you? A bit of history buffs. Planksty Song.
All right, go on.
Follow Me Up to Carlow.
I mean, I know the Follow Me Up to Carlow punchline.
Fiacc McHugh was one of the warriors who would have won one of those wars in what, this is sort of the 17th century, is one of the rare Irish wins over the English. Glenmalure,
Red Hugh and all the Flight of the Earls, that generation.
Yeah, give or take. So yeah, 17th century, so a lot of the battles, obviously, like that was, I don't know, was that the Nine Years' War or whatever it was, but basically the Irish lost most of them. But Fíor Mac Hugh was one of the leaders who won one of the wars, and Follow Me Up to Carlow was reportedly written on the spot of the battle afterwards, by, and then has been sung by Christy Moore and so on and so forth. But yeah, it was Fíor Mac Hugh's probably going to fall short, unfortunately, in this battle. I came up with Comfort Zone, but by the sounds of Aidan, like, from to mention the one horse all weekend, he's Snowfall, he's all these, like, I really do
up against you,
I really do fancy Comfort Aidan against Johnny Ward. There's only one winner there.
Stick your neck out, go on.
Fairness, Comfort Zone, like, it's if it's going to be an each way price, it ran such a good race at the Curragh. I love the pedigree. And Churchill is a son of Galileo, of which there are high hopes as well. He gets beautiful horses, but they got to walk the walk as well.
Yeah. All right, well, should we know it takes a little bit of time for that to happen. Friday Night Racing and Off the Ball is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie and we will see you next week. Cheers.
Friday Night Racing on Off the Ball. Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.